There's about a billion decisions that you have to make before your kids are finally kind of on their own. And then even at that point in time, there's still a bunch of decisions that you've got to make as well. You know, how much are you going to be involved in their lives, and how much are you going to be involved in the kids' lives and the grandkids' lives and all the different things. And so there's just a ton of decisions that have to be made. And there are two ways that you can make a decision. There's the authoritative way, and those of you that have small children, this is pretty much how you should probably handle things at this point in time. Authoritative is, there's no give and take, this is what you're doing, this is the direction that you're going, this is how you're going to do that, and that's the authoritative right way. And then there's what's called the cooperative way. And as your kids get older, you need to move from the authoritative, where everything is your decision and there's no input, there's no back and forth, there's no conversation, to what's called the more cooperative process, where you're wanting input from them. You're wanting them to kind of give you some ideas of what's going on. You're helping them make the right decision, helping them move in that way. And so as your kids get older, you move out of that authoritative and more towards that cooperative. Even as they're outside of your home, until they are completely on their own, you still should really be helping them in the decision-making process. Scientists tell us that brains aren't completely really formed until 25. So there you go. Just, you know, think through that as your kids. People say, oh, my kid's 16. No, they still need help. Well, my kid's 18, they still need help. My kid's 35, they probably still need help. So you process this. So when they're like young, right, it's 100% authoritative. You're really not looking for input. You're telling them that what's right and what's wrong. You're teaching them those things. And as they get older and they get into those, you know, those grade school years, you want a little more feedback from them. Hey, do you like this food? You know, no, I don't really like that. Okay, well, maybe we'll do this. And so that type of thing. And then as they get into their tweens, you want to change it even a little bit more, maybe almost like that 60-40 where you want 40% feedback from them. But then as they get into their teens, and especially their older teens, that cooperative and authoritative really needs to be almost a 50-50 split. Well, what you're doing is you still hold the authority, you're still the parent, but yet you're looking for input and feedback from them because you want to teach them, or as they would say, you know, down south, you want to learn them how to actually be able to make decisions, right? You want to teach them how to be able to make wise decisions. If you stay in the authoritative phase the entirety of your child's life, whether in your home, when they step out of your home, they will have no idea how to make a decision. They have no idea how to think. They have no idea how to examine things and actually be able to make a decision on their own. And we see so many kids, and unfortunately, I see it. I'm a pastor's kid, but obviously my kids are pastor's kids. And we see it so many times with kids that grow up in the church, and they're great, and they're fine, and they're in the church. They graduate from high school, and they go off to college. People are like, that's it. They shouldn't go off to college. They should stay home. I'm sure there's a homeschool college. Everything's online now. Just stay at home, and we'll put you in this protective bubble. That doesn't work either. The reality is that because when they get to that point, they've not been given the ability or taught how to make decisions. And so when they get into the world and they're attacked with these billions of decisions that you as a parent have been protecting them from, they don't know what to do. And so they start making poor and poor decisions. And as you know, as a parent, you make one bad decision as an adult, guess what? That's usually followed up by another and another and another. And it begins the domino effect. So as they get into those double digits, it's really important to help them understand how to make wise decisions. And you go, okay, but that's difficult, right? That's hard. To sit down with your 13-year-old and talk to them about, you know, relationships with other people, talk to them about things that are going on at school, how to handle a difficult person, all those things, it's way easier to say, this is what you do. It's way easier. I'm going to be honest with you. It is much easier to be authoritative. It's just simpler. It's easier. It's cleaner. There's no mess. They might cry a little bit, but they'll get over it. But the reality is if you don't teach them and you don't work through them, then this verse that we're about to read actually becomes reality. Because as they grow up, they want to learn how to walk on their own. They want to learn how to think on their own. They want to learn how to do that. And if you're not there helping them, if you're continually telling them everything in their life and managing everything in their life, then Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4 actually becomes a reality. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, by the way that you treat them. Not just as fathers, and we always like, yeah, dads are so mean and so hard, but this is really not just a father thing. This is really a parental thing. And so as we read it, we need to say, hey, parents, don't provoke your children to basically what he's saying, react to you in anger because of how you treat them, because of how you interact with them, or maybe your lack of interaction with them. And he goes on to say, rather, bring them up with the discipline. Remember, we talked about that last week. Those of you that were here last week or watched online last week, when we read the word discipline in the Bible, we should hear what word? Anybody? Anybody at all? Remember? Like, were we here last week? Was there something going on last week? There was training, right? When we see the word discipline, we need to think the word training. So he says, listen, you need to train and instruct them in what comes from the Lord. So if we don't adapt and change and shift that focus from 100% authoritarian to then maybe a little more 60-40, 50-50 as they continue to grow, changing that a little bit more, then the reality is that we're going to actually stunt their ability and they're going to react to us in a way that doesn't work, in a way that actually causes friction between us. So the key to this cooperative decision-making as they get older is communication. You're like, talking with my teenager, yeah, that's not the most enjoyable thing sometimes. It's, you know, they use words. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to be 48 this year. Teen words sometimes, I see it. I'm like, I have no, what does that even mean? I don't even understand that. There's great videos that will help you learn that. So, but it's really an interesting thing. But if we're going to have this, you need to have communication. It needs to be a two-way street. You need to be able to allow them to talk to you about what's going on in their head. Because if you know what's going on in their brain, then you can continue that conversation and be able to move them in the direction. It's got to be a give and a take, a talk and a listen. So here's the big idea. Talk with your teen. Talk with your teen, not at your teen. Talk with your teen, not at your teen. If you don't know what the difference is, then just remember when you were a teenager and you got really, really upset because of a decision that your parents made and they told you what was going to happen but never explained why. They never gave you the understanding behind it. That's talking at your teen. Talking with your teen is, hey, this is what we're going to do. Let's walk through it together why we're going to do this, why this is the decision that we're going to make. So it's a big difference. Teen years are filled with success and failure, winning and losing, laughter and tears, boys and girls. There's all sorts of stuff, but the key is leveraging each and every one of those opportunities to teach your children, to teach your teen the right way to think. Because believe it or not, a whole bunch of people turn 18 and graduate from high school, and they still don't know how to think. I don't mean like they're stupid. I mean like they've never been taught how to critically think. When a decision comes their way, to ask the right questions internally, to weigh the options, to try to figure out what is the most best. Wow, that's great grammar. Clearly, I got this trouble sometime thinking. Okay, so, but you really look at this and you have to figure out how to think, and you got to teach your kids how to think, because that's essentially what your goal is, to be able to help them process through decision makings and doing that. Now, if you still struggle with the difference between talking with your teen and at your teen, I'll give you the simplest definition that I can give you, and it really boils down to this. Sometimes how you talk with your teen ends up leaving more of a lasting impression than what you talk to them about. So if you're using more exclamation points in your conversation than question marks, then what you're doing is you're talking more at your teen than you are with your teen. Now, those of you that are teenagers, either here or listening, don't be like, that's right, mom and dad, that you don't get to hug. No, 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 they're your parent, right? They are your authority. They are your authority until they give you away to somebody else in marriage. They are your authority, okay? That's the way that the Bible calls it. So don't be like trying to do that. But as parents, if we want to get through to our kids, we've got to use more question marks than we do exclamation points. I'll give you an idea of what that sounds like. Exclamation point. What were you thinking? Do you see how that feels, right? You're probably like, I just said that earlier today. But then you put the question mark in there. You go, now what were you thinking? You see the difference? You're literally trying to elicit a response. You're trying to get interaction between the two. Another example for you. Why did you just do that? Again, insert the question mark instead of the exclamation point. Now, why did you just do that? Do you see the difference? That's the difference between talking at your teen and talking with your teen. As parents of teens, we need to use fewer exclamation points and more question marks. And so I want to just walk you through a couple things that hopefully will help you either as a leader of other people, because it's the same way with that, try to use more question marks than exclamation points, but also the parent of a teen. And so the first one is this. You need to patiently guide their thought process. Patiently guide their thought process. Now that first word is really the key word because honestly, it is easier just to tell them what to do. It is way easier. You don't have to struggle. You don't have to explain. You don't have to teach, you know, use words that they get and them use words that you get. It's way easier just to tell them what to do. But the reality is if you're not patient with them and you're not patiently guiding them through the process, they're not seeing the steps that you're taking as a parent. You know, you've got 25 years on them, maybe 30 years on them of experience. They don't have that. So when you say this isn't the smart thing to do, that doesn't calculate to them. So you have to show them, guide them through the thought process why this isn't a smart thing to do or this is a smart thing to do. Teach them how to think, not just what to think. One of the best things you can do is arm your teenagers with questions that they can ask. The best question ever, I think we gave you that, is either last week or 2 weeks ago from Andy Stanley, right? Based upon my future hopes and dreams, my past experiences, you know, what is the wisest thing for me to do today? What is the best decision that I can make right now? So arm them with questions like that. You know, when we would talk with our girls, especially as they were younger and trying to process through that, we would ask the questions, well, why would you do that? What was the question behind that? What were you thinking when you did that? Why did you do that? You know, and then we would say, those are questions you can ask yourself when we're not around, because the reality is you will not be around forever. Whether it's because you die and you move on, or because your kids grow out of your house, you won't be there forever for them to lean on and constantly ask you to do that. And Ephesians chapter 4, verses 2 through 3 says this, be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. Now, this verse is almost always used when it comes to interaction with other Christians in the church. Like, get along. Stop being so ugly to each other. Don't worry if they wore gray and you wore gray and who wore, you know. Don't worry about that. Just try to, you know, be nice to each other. Be patient. But if we put this in the context of a relationship between a parent and a child, that takes a whole new dynamic on how we're supposed to be parenting. Listen, be patient. Be gentle. Try to keep the unity of the spirit of your household. Because if somebody in your family is freaking out, guess what? It upsets everything within the home. And so patiently guide them through their thought process and being able to do that. Second one is consistently invest in the relationship. Consistently invest in the relationship. Find ways that you can connect with your teen as they continue to grow up. It can become increasingly challenging and difficult. I'm not going to lie. As your kids get older, they develop their own personalities, the things that they love, the things that they enjoy, the things that you used to do together, they're not so excited about. You know, when it comes to this, probably, in, you know, and Caitlin's here, and so I'll throw her under the bus for a second. But when she was little, she would literally stay up with me and watch Monday Night Football all the time. She loved the colors and the different things. Like, literally, I'm talking like 6 months old. She would sit up, not go to sleep, watch Monday Night Football till 1 o'clock, you know, in the morning with me, and loved it until she was about, I don't know, 5 years old. And then it was like, nah, I'm done with that. Now, if I continue to try to force that passion on her, it's just not going to work. Why? Because she's become her own person, and she apparently hates sports. So the reality is that you've got to figure out, you know, how you can find common passions as your children continue to grow up and invest in that relationship. And you go, man, that's so hard. Yes, but here's the most important thing to understand. If you don't invest in the relationship, somebody else will. Somebody else will. And you as their parent have the responsibility to be the most important and influential voice in your child's life as they grow up. And if you don't invest in the relationship, your voice will be pushed to the background and never be heard. So you've got to constantly find things that you have in common to be able to invest in the relationship. Fight less, invest more. Fight for the relationship, but not in the relationship. Proverbs chapter 23, verses 22 through 26. It says this: listen to your father. This is for those of you that are younger still, and also a challenge to us as parents to set this environment up so that this happens, okay? Listen to your father who gave you life and who can take it away. It doesn't say that. And so we're like, wow, I don't know that said that in the Bible. Okay, listen to your father who gave you life, and do not forget your mother when she is old. That can change. The age can change. Learn the truth and never reject it. Get wisdom, self-control, and understanding. The father of a good child is very happy. Parents who have wise children are glad because of them. Make your father and mother happy. Kind of sounds like a make your mama happy. Make your father and your mother happy. Give your mother a reason to be glad and tell other people in her old age about how great you are. My son, pay attention to me and watch closely what I do. See, if you don't have the relationship, you can't say these words. You have to work at the relationship so that you can consistently have that voice in their life and say, listen, look at what I'm doing. See how I'm living. Follow the pattern that I'm laying out. I'm not perfect. I'm not going to always do it. But here's the cool part. The last one comes in and lays right in perfectly with that, because some of your greatest mistakes can set them up for some of their greatest successes. So as we look at those things, and we see this last one's this: honestly convey your struggles. So don't just guide them through the thought process, and don't just consistently invest in the relationship, but also you've got to be open, honest, and vulnerable. Now, as I say this, you've got to have the right timing, right? Like when your kid is 5 years old, it's probably not the time to talk to them about the stupid ragers that you made when you were in college and the things that you did and the fact that you were arrested once because, you know, your friend had marijuana. You didn't know that. Your kid's going to be like going to school telling the kindergarten teacher that their mom and dad are drug dealers. And then you're going to have somebody knock on your door and say, hey, we need to talk to you. So, you know, make sure that you're doing it at appropriate times. But here's the beautiful part. They're your kids. And because they're your kids, they're going to screw up. Do you know why? Because you've screwed up. And that's just reality, because we're all human beings and we're all going to make mistakes. So when they screw up and you go, wow, that reminds me when I screwed up, you can have a conversation with them and go, hey, you know what? You're right. That was a screw up. But let's talk about this. You know, when I was your age, I made a decision. But let me share with you what happened after that decision. And either I regret doing that, or man, when I made that right, everything put the pieces back together. But as you honestly convey that, it makes you a real person to them. I know it's difficult to actually believe this, but believe it or not, your kids, for the most part of their lives, look up to you. And they've even done surveys of teenagers up to 17 years of age, and they ask the question, who's the person that you respect most? And still, by 20 percentage points, mom and dad still mark that. Even though they live in your house and they see what you do, they still actually hold you in that esteem. So invest in that relationship, have those conversations, and then honestly convey your struggles, because your failures could empower their successes. Your mistakes can set them up for a greater success in life. Galatians chapter 6, verses 1 through 3. Again, none of these verses are verses you would typically go, oh, that's a great mom and dad parent verse. But this one really, I think, is so powerful in the understanding of a mom and a dad coming alongside a child who's blown it. And look at what it says. Dear brothers and sisters, if another believer is overcome by some sin, you who are godly should gently and humbly help that person back on the right path. Come alongside them. Some of the greatest teaching moments that you're ever going to have is after your child made a huge mistake and they're on the floor in tears trying to figure it out, and you can either react in anger or react in compassion and mercy, but yet then guide and go, now, here's how we need to put the pieces back together to be able to move forward. So he says, gently and humbly guide that person back onto the right path, and be careful not to fall into the same temptation yourself. Share each other's burdens, and in this way, obey the law of Christ. If you think that you are too important to help someone, you are only fooling yourself. I love this. You are not that important. Doesn't matter who you think you are, you're not that important, right? Because God is the one that's working in and through each and every one of us, and so that humbleness to be able to do that. I want to kind of take a 90-degree real quickly, because for those of you that don't have teenagers, as I said at the beginning, you can use this in a leadership context. You know, making sure that you're guiding those who you're leading through the thought process. Because it's easy, right? When you're making a decision, you're in your own brain the whole time. And then you go, oh, this is what we're going to do. And I've done that so many times, like, oh, this is what we're going to do. And like everyone's like, okay, just quick question. What about this and this and this and this and this? And like, oh, I've already got all the answers. Here's what we're going to do. And you kind of run through it. But you have to guide everyone through that thought process. You have to be able to work through those things with them and invest in those relationships and honestly convey your struggles. Some of the greatest teaching moments that I've been able to have in just leadership is going, okay, let me tell you something. This is what I did, and it was way worse than what you did. And we recovered, and it's okay, and we'll move on. It's all right. Life will work through it and be able to do that, and you can do that with your kids as well. Now, I know that this seems like a long, laborious process. It's much easier to say, this is what we're doing. But the reality is, your goal is not to make the quickest, fastest decision possible. Your goal, if we remember the verse at the beginning, is to train your child to think like God thinks, to be able to help your child process through them so that they can make decisions outside the bubble of your home, so that you raise them so that they can confidently release them into a world filled with decisions and consequences of joy and sorrow, laughter and pain. And whether we like it or not, that moment where we're no longer in their lives is coming way faster than we think. And if we're not taking the time to do those things, then we're missing out on one of the greatest gifts that God has given us in helping our children learn how to make right and godly decisions. So, consistently and patiently guide them, consistently invest in the relationship, and openly and honestly convey your struggles so that they can stand on your shoulders as they move forward in life. Father God, we thank you so much. It's such a joy to be able to spend time in your word. And God, although we're not all in the same position, we're not all in the same boat as having teenagers, God, we all know and understand that we have to learn how to make good decisions. We have to learn how to think critically. We have to learn how to understand what's going on and take all of the input and be able to understand and work through it and then have the output of a good decision, or at least the best decision possible with the information that we have. And God, as parents, you've entrusted us with these unbelievable gifts, even though sometimes it's hard, especially as they become teenagers and their personalities change and they struggle with things and they don't always communicate with us. God, never let us as parents give up, give in, or throw our hands up and say, well, you know, they'll figure it out, because God, that's our job. That's our role, is to come alongside and help them understand how to make the best decision possible, help them understand how to think like you think, and to be all that you've called them to be. And I thank you for that, God, and I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Let's stand and respond.